Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. Mace and Mike. Happy Friday. It's the end of another long week, Mike, but we still got some left to talk about.
It feels like it's the end of, like, five long weeks.
It does.
Every week feels like five
Every
long
week
weeks.
Feels like five long weeks. There's a lot. Everybody has a lot of questions about jobs, unemployment, the economy right now. And so we brought in an expert. Joining us on the phone is Professor Thomas Gilbert. He's a finance professor at the Michael G. Foster School of Business at the University of Washington. Professor Gilbert, thanks for coming on Cairo Nights.
My pleasure to be here.
So, Professor Gilbert, let's start with, I've been reading the, as we all have, the unemployment numbers, but let me back up just a little bit to sort of kind of set the table. When we're looking at unemployment numbers, either we're talking about 1982 or we're talking about right now and sort of a level of unprecedented numbers, what are we talking about when we see unemployment numbers and the actual number of people unemployed? I mean, I imagine that there is a gap between the two. How do we even count that?
So what is happening is that the government, basically, there's people applying for unemployment. So these are these initial jobless claims that were filed last week, and that are being filed every single week. And then there's an estimate of the total employed workforce, so people who are looking for jobs and people who are employed. And then we have the total number of unemployed, and then we just take a ratio of the total number of unemployed to the total employed or looking for work, sort of total workforce. And that gives us the unemployment rate. And the numbers that came this week were these initial jobless claims where people are just given a recent layoff, you will apply for unemployment. And these are these new claims being filed. This is a weekly number that the government reports about new claims to unemployment benefits having been filed in the last five, six days.
Okay, so when we see the number recently in the Washington Post of 3.3 million people have filed for unemployment, that's a fair guess on how many people, at least that many people right now, who are out of work and away from their jobs, at least for a short term.
So that is correct. I think the unemployment rate as of last month was 3.5%, which is roughly 6 million unemployed workers. So what happened last week is we have 3.3 million additional people who have filed for unemployment claims as of last Friday. So as of Friday, so it's important to remember that it's actually not this week, it's last week. So the week that ended on the 21st of March, and that's an additional 3.3 million unemployed workers just in these 5 days of the week ending March 21st.
I know these numbers are unprecedented. I'm someone who I don't speak math or numbers. Mike, I like to say Mike's the smart one, and you're one of the smart ones. So could you explain to me how is this too much? Are we going to be able to handle these unprecedented amounts of unemployment?
So it's a lot. We have never seen numbers like this. The highest weekly new jobless claims ever filed since in the history that we have data on, so roughly since the 1960s, was about 600,000 in 1 week. Again, you mentioned the early 1980 recession. This was the number. And now we have this 3.3 million number that came up, which is completely unprecedented. We've never seen anything like this. And this is, however, expected in the sense that we basically, governors and the federal government, have ordered an enormous amount of the economy to stop. We have told every restaurant and every, sort of retail establishment that is non-essential to basically close their doors. And so you have all these shops, all these small and medium-sized businesses that were told stop. And even if they had not been told stop, people were already not going because they were, doing social distancing and so on, maybe on their own. So sales were all decreasing. And now on top of that, they've been told to stop. People, households have been told stay at home. And so all these people are getting out of work like instantaneously. This is millions of people unemployed within a couple of weeks. And I can tell you, unfortunately, that the number next week will be that we're going to release, that is going to be released next Thursday, will be probably even bigger and even worse, because this will be for this week where even more states have entered lockdowns.
So this
is going to lead to an unemployment, if I can just conclude
please.
This is going to lead to an unemployment rate. So when we take the total number of unemployed over the total workforce, that's going to reach 10% in a matter of weeks, and we'll probably reach 15% within a matter of, again, 3 weeks or so.
Wow. So then when we're looking at this type of unprecedented unemployment, is there a distinction between what is happening now, which is, again, as unprecedented, so I guess there's always a distinction, but what's happening now as opposed to what happened in, say, let's just use the early 80s recession or even the mortgage crisis where a lot of people lost their jobs? Because this is an intentional shutdown, but it may be one of those engines that's a little difficult to restart. Is that a fair assumption?
Exactly. So I think it's important to distinguish sort of the difference that we're in right now. These recessions from the 80s or 2008 and other recessions going far back, typically they stem from a sector of the economy that falls apart. The real estate sector back in 2008 and hampered by the financial sector, manufacturing and production in the 80s, this was driven by a rise in interest rates. So these sectors, for whatever reason, fell apart. And so you have the economy, a part of the economy, for fundamental reasons, sort of not disappears, but struggles. And typically what this happens, that this leads to the sector falling apart, and it has a trickle effect through the economy, and you have, you know, increases in unemployment that's typically not super fast. It happens over time as these bankruptcies in one sector affect other sectors, and more people get out of work, and you have a rise in unemployment that is not so fast. Whereas right now, we basically turned off the switch immediately. And so you have these millions of people immediately out of payroll. And that's very, very different. So I think the second part of your question leads to, okay, how might this bounce back? Whether these job losses are permanent or temporary. And I think the hope is that if this shutdown driven by the virus and the containment of the coronavirus can be kept relatively short, a month, maybe 6 weeks, maybe 2 months. I don't know, right? I'm making up some time frames. And the businesses, the underlying businesses, do not go completely out of business, do not have to shut their doors permanently. Then the moment we can all go back out again, these businesses will reopen instantaneously and rehire instantaneously. The danger is that the longer this shutdown takes, the more the fundamental pain of the economy will start, and businesses across many sectors will shut down permanently. And then when we come back out of this, since these businesses will be shut down permanently, they will not be able to rehire because they will be bankrupt. And then some of these millions and millions of jobs will never come back. And so this is all an issue of how long is this going to take? If it's a month to 2 months, given the liquidity infusions that are being put in place by Congress and the Federal Reserve and others, maybe as many businesses as possible can hold on for a month to 2 months. But if suddenly this is 3 months, this is all going to fall apart.
So that makes me want to ask about this bill, this $2 trillion COVID-19 bill that the president signed today. It feels like two things to me. One is a tremendous amount of money, and two, it seems very early in what is going to be probably a long battle with this coronavirus. Am I right? Am I wrong?
It's hard to tell. So let me just pick one thing in that bill to put things into context and put a little bit of precision. On the small business, so there's about $350 billion in that bill available as loans for small businesses. And these loans that will be administered through the Small Business Administration and other commercial banks will be forgiven if those businesses use these loans, so use this borrowed amount, to pay payroll, to keep people on payroll and pay their fixed costs. So pay your rent and keep your people on payroll. If you use the money for that, then the loans will be forgiven. And the amount of these loans is equivalent to 2.5 months of payroll. That's the language that's in the bill right now that was just signed. And so we're hovering again around this 2 to 3 months framework of if we have to lock down for 2 months, hopefully that's enough to contain the virus. We are providing enough liquidity to small and medium-sized businesses, 2.5 months of payroll and fixed costs. This should allow them, as many of them as possible, to stay solvent so that in 2.5 months they can reopen.
Right.
But you're right. If this becomes a long battle, and if in 2.5 months we're not out, this is not going to be enough. And either we're going to need another bill, or we're going to start seeing economic sort of real downgrade with waves of defaults, both by small, medium-sized businesses and households. And this would then really start hurting.
Is there any historical comparison? I mean, you brought up the point, and I think it's a good one, that this is a very different sort of unemployment wave than we've experienced in the past. Is there any point in history that we can compare to what is happening now? Or is this, like everyone says, and the most overused word right now is it actually unprecedented?
So we don't have a comparison point where we have data. I think one useful comparison point, I can't pinpoint a particular date, but is this shock, because we are an integrated service economy. And so when you have a virus shock, you get this lockdown problem. I think a useful comparison to think through this is this shock is equivalent to a bad weather shock for an agriculture society. So imagine an economy that is mostly agricultural, and then you get a really bad weather shock. So what is going to happen is your crop for this year is gone. But the underlying soil isn't bad. You just have to somehow survive 1 year or one season, or whatever the length of time that is, until you can replant. And I think this is very similar here. We have a liquidity problem in the short run. We have to be able to survive 2 months, hopefully 2 months. I'll stick with that 2 months. But then the vast majority of businesses are solvent. They're good businesses. Boeing is not going to go out of business. There are many restaurants that are not going to go out of business. They will come back. When people go back out, they will shop again. Airlines will buy new airplanes. The question is, can you sustain, from a liquid point of view, the 2 months in the meantime? In the same way that the farmer who's just lost his crop, his or her crop, needs to survive one season before they can for sure plant again, because the soil will be fine the next season.
So let's say then that this does go into that sort of red, the critical area. Let's say it does go a couple of months. What should the government's response be at that point? I mean, that's when the pressure is going to be acute. Do we ramp back the social distancing and allow businesses to reopen to save the economy, or at least save it short term, the economy? Or do we clamp down and find some other way to survive and not open it until everything is in a better state?
So I think this is hard. I think we'll have more information as time goes on. But I think what economists are starting to think about is right now there's a certain state of emergency. And so everything's urgent, and we're just, you know, throwing lots of dollars, trying to keep businesses solvent, liquid, and so on. But I think now we've passed this big bill, we need to maintain, to control the medical angle, right? Making sure that hospitals aren't overwhelmed. There's all this supply of this supply issues on the medical side. But now we have a bit more time to think about how could we reopen in a safe way. I think right now we took a big machete, if you want, and we just locked down everything. And I think that now we have a bit of time, politicians, policymakers, administrators, and so on, to take more of a scalpel approach and say, okay, are there parts that we can reopen? Are there certain sectors we can reopen in very strategic ways, maybe not geographically too close, or trying to think carefully industry by industry, maybe even firm by firm or sector by sector or region by region? Are there ways to reopen parts of it in a strategic way, such that the economic machine sort of operates at some reasonable percentage without being at zero? But the danger, of course, that everybody fears is that if we reopen everything to 100% right away, then no more social distancing. Certainly the virus, let's say it's still there, then it respreads and we get a second wave that's going to be even worse. And I think now would be, my advice would be, it's time for everyone to think carefully about, okay, how can we took this big hammer approach, good, fine, we needed it. Now in terms of reopening, can we take a scalpel approach and be much more strategic?
So this is going to sound a little bit counterintuitive, but you would know better than me. Other than the fact that it's going to keep a lot of economists employed with research papers, is there anything good, I mean potentially good economically, that will come out of this?
Well, I think we're all going to get very good at teleworking. this might actually allow people to spend less time in the office and more time with their families over the long run, and realize this isn't so bad.
But is that a good thing?
I think it's not a bad thing. I think we spend way too much time at the office, and it wouldn't be so bad to be home when the kids get home. Things like this. I think there's fundamental sectors that are going to move. I think this, long distance education. I think retail is going to change. I think more and more people are going to shop online. I mean, this was already a trend, right? I mean, malls are disappearing. I think this is just going to be the nail in the coffin for shopping malls. And there's other, like telehealth, everything sort of long distance. I think this is going to be potentially very good. I think we will get better and better at operating sort of remotely in various industries.
So, Professor,
and I think one thing, and I think I'll add one more thing. Mm-hmm. I think we've all learned to wash our hands much better than we used to.
Yes. I think that's entirely true.
And yes. That's good,
Professor. We have one more minute. How are things over at UW? What's the scene like over there?
I can tell you the campus is extremely quiet. I had to come in today exceptionally to do some teaching prep because the quarter starts next week and I needed some things, supplies, and get some things organized. But the campus is very quiet. I think all the students are gearing up for the spring. We'll see how this online teaching work. We'll see we're using Zoom, whatever, to all the classes will be on there. So hopefully on Monday, Tuesday, the system is not going to crash. We're holding department meetings remotely. We're helping each other a lot. There's a lot of emails going back and forth between colleagues about, hey, I'm thinking about using this technique to keep students engaged. I'm thinking about, flipping the classroom this way. Anybody has tips? So there's been a lot of collaboration, a lot of interactions, obviously remote interactions, about how to make sure that the teaching experience for UW undergrads and graduate students is as good as possible, even though nothing replaces in the classroom instruction.
That is Thomas Gilbert. He's a finance professor at the Michael G. Foster School of Business at the University of Washington. Thank you so much, Professor, for explaining all of that to us.
It's been a pleasure. Anytime. Happy to chat some more.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll be back with